You are listening to a free version of The Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, May 9th, 2014. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's casual Friday, folks. As you can see on the Sammy Cam today, spent more time prepping than primping. And as it is casual Friday, joining us, the great Cliff Schechter. And the equally great, if not marginally even greater, Isabel Gillies will be here to tell us, forgive me, I guess, and you, a movie suggestion for the weekend. Oh, it's casual Friday. And of course, we'll be taking your calls and your IMs on the program today. Koch Brothers AFP memo detailing the $100 million plus they're going to spend in this midterm elections. There's a little caveat. The American people don't like our agenda. We can fix that. Also on the program today, hedge funders take in, I think it's like the top 32, take in something like $25 billion. More information on how charter schools drain our public education system of funds and then basically very often turn around and provide, if not better results than more fraudulent ones. North Carolina just goes to show you the Tea Party wins even when they lose. Net neutrality pushback is having an impact. Not just outside of the FCC, but within. The complaints are inside the House. And today on the program, we've talked about it briefly before, but the story of one of President Obama's nominees for the federal judgeship, shockingly odious. And, of course, Benghazi, folks. This could define the next 6 months of everything. But we will get to that. Folks, I want to take this moment to remind you that this program is funded right now. It changes during the course of the year. Sometimes our program is funded 98.9% by member donations, subscriptions, whatever you want to call it. Presently, it's funded by membership donations by about 99.3% or 6%. We don't have a calculator here, and nobody can do math, so we don't really. These are guesstimates. So, if you have the ability to become a member, please, we need your support to help us grow. You could become a member today at majority.fm, and by all means, you should be going on to iTunes or into the Google Marketplace and giving the podcast and the app good reviews. Those are very, very important in terms of pushing us up on the charts, particularly the podcast. There's no reason, if you've given us a review in the past, go back and give us a new one. Every little bit helps. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Cliff Schechter. Oh, and I should also say, we do have a Walter Block mix that we're going to be doing at the end of the free show, I think. All right, we'll be right back. We'll be talking to Cliff Schechter. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Folks, it's Casual Friday. You know what that means. That means Cliff Schechter. And you know what that means. That means this.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. If you want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.com.
We are back. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Cliff Schechter. Hello, Cliff.
Samuel, how are you?
I'm a little bit out of sorts because apparently Twitter just activated web notifications on your web browser, and I'm getting these notifications now, and it's weird. But aside from that, I'm fine.
So they're telling you on your browser that people are saying stuff about you?
Yeah. Yeah.
And they,
like, I need that in my life.
Were they Facebook? They don't ask us anymore? They just send us crap?
No, I don't. I don't even deal with Facebook anymore. I can't handle that.
I know, but I'm saying, what is that what Twitter's turning into? So they're just going to, like, send us every, you know, like, somebody passed gas on Facebook in Sri Lanka. You should know about it.
There you go. I don't know. That's... I got to figure out now how to turn those things off, but let's stop talking about. We got too much to talk about here.
There's just now, too much crap going on.
There's
I know.
Too much crap going on, and so I'm not sure where to start here. Now, you know, I think Benghazi is going to be a big story. Well, let's get to that in a minute. I want to talk about this judge nomination, Michael Boggs. We've talked about this briefly in the past. But I think this is going to start getting more attention. Set the table for us. There was a deal made by President Obama because we still, even though we now have gotten rid of the filibuster for judicial nominees below the Supreme Court, I believe it is.
That is correct.
We still have this thing called blue slips, which is not a rule in the Senate. It's really just a tradition where the Senate Judiciary Committee chairperson allows sort of like a deference to senators from any given state to hold up nominees from their state for a federal judgeship. And so a deal had to be struck with these nut jobs from these Georgia Republican senators.
That's right.
Because they were filibustering, I guess, or blue slip.
Well, they wouldn't return their blue slip.
Yeah.
Right.
No.
So, and you know, just so people can be clear about this, you've got that mostly correct, Sam. But this is a tradition. But it's a tradition that has not been respected by Republicans in the past.
I'm shocked.
I'm sure will shock you.
I'm shocked.
Orrin Hatch, when he was the chairman and of the committee, excuse me, and Bill Clinton wanted to put judges on, just decided to go ahead and discard that whole thing. So, you know, again, it's just another one of those where, like, you feel like being a Democrat, you're fighting with one arm tied behind your back. You're fighting against a force, you know, quite frankly, that is a deleterious, I don't want to say the word evil, but maybe I should, that will do anything to win. We'll ignore any precedent, we'll destroy any tradition, we'll break laws, quite frankly, and we're sort of, oh, well, we shouldn't do that. And you know, even though I like him on lots of things, I'm sorry, but the person responsible here is Pat Leahy, who should be getting letters, phone calls, whatever it takes, because he's going, well, we're not quite ready to do that. What the hell does it take for you to be ready to do that? Again, they've now, in response to getting rid of the filibuster, the whole point of that was so we could get judges on who are people that are not crazy people, who don't, for example, think the Confederate flag is awesome, and think Planned Parenthood should be completely
funded. All right, now hold on. Let's not get ahead of ourselves here. So
I always get ahead of myself.
I know, because your mind thinks that way. But I want to walk
I'm ahead, I'm behind. I don't even know where the hell I am.
The deal is, and I'm trying to figure out the exact contours of the deal. But essentially, they wanted to get the blue slip back on Jill Pryor of Atlanta to sit on a U.S. appellate court. And so the deal is we'll approve a couple of three other judges, Republican judges, and we get one more Democratic judge. Okay?
I mean, that seems like a really fair deal, too, when you have the president of your own party.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll get these three, and we get one.
But then... So we get the Jill Pryor, and then I want to read something about the second pick that we get. The bills that this person sponsored, when they were in the Georgia state legislature, were a constitutional ban on same-sex marriage. In Georgia, understand, there was already a law saying there's no marriage equality. They wanted,
the laws aren't enough, dude. It must be enshrined in the Constitution.
It must be enshrined in the Constitution. Legislation to feature the Ten Commandments in all of Georgia's county courthouses. Multiple bills related to fighting a woman's right to choose, including one that would create Choose Life license plates. And another one that would impose tougher restrictions on minors seeking abortions, even in the case of rape and incest. Now, that pick... is the Democrat. That is the Democratic pick that we get. And his name is Michael Boggs. Now, here's the interesting thing, too, about this guy. When he was addressing questions from members of the committee as to what bills he sponsored in the Georgia State House as a Democratic state senator, he didn't include any of those. And
right.
Apparently they're saying, they said to him, you didn't send everything. And then he said, oh, that was an oversight. I didn't know you'd want those. And so he's now had to send all of them. And the committee is reviewing this. This is unbelievable that this is supposed to be, this is not the consolation prize. This is supposed to be this is what winning looks like for the president.
Yeah. I mean, again, right? It's, I don't know. I don't even know what to say. You know, like I again and again get to a point where it's depressing isn't the right word. I guess the word is you just want to walk away because this guy won't fight on anything. If any deal is to be had, as long as he gets 20%, it's okay. You know, and it's unfathomable. The Democratic president would put this guy, this scumbag, quite frankly, on the court. It's just on any court. Unfathomable. That's one of the main reasons we're electing Democratic presidents is because of the courts. I mean, you know, I don't know.
I want to read this from, I think this is from the Washington Post, which talks about there was a 26-page addendum that lists bills that Boggs sponsored and votes he took while serving in the Georgia House from 2000 to 2004 as part of his, like, you know, his questionnaire. It also cites speeches he'd given. It's not unusual for a nominee to provide supplemental materials to the committee. It's notable that Boggs provided in his original paperwork a lengthy description of the kinds of bills he sponsored as a state legislator, but left out legislation on abortion, gay marriage, and religious freedom, which now appear in the addendum because somebody said, hey, wait a second. This doesn't seem like a complete record. As if he didn't think that would be relevant to Democratic senators voting for this guy.
No, it's not relevant, clearly. That's not important stuff. I mean, I guess in the end, what's the, you know, you just sort of like, so what's the point? I would rather have no judges. I mean, if you're going to put this guy on, what's even the point of this whole exercise here of even having a Democratic president? I've got a wonderful idea. Let's see if maybe Scalia, has a close relative and we can maybe put that person on this court. Because essentially, Boggs' record seems pretty much to me, I'm not a legal scholar, but just a quick glance on the issues you've discussed here seems to be pretty much exactly that of a Scalia or an Alito.
Well, the thing is that he sat on a federal judgeship, since becoming a legislator, but he never addressed any of these issues. So we really have no sense of how he's going to approach this as a judge at this point. Although I imagine, people are looking at, this guy's time now that they have this addendum, they're going to look into those bills. But I mean, we don't have a sense of what his, we just know that the guy really, at the very least, as a politician, does not really comport with what one would think would be a nominee for a federal judgeship from a Democratic president. And, we should say that simultaneous to this,
this guy would be the right of, like, a Gerald Ford Republican pick, quite frankly.
Oh, absolutely. To the right.
We're not getting a Rockefeller Republican here.
George H.W. Bush.
We're getting an old Dixie Confederate right-wing Republican. That's what we're getting here.
And the only reason why this guy is not a Republican is because of the space that the Tea Party has created for so-called establishment Republicans. And let's not kid ourselves, folks. This is just really, it's just a branding opportunity at different points.
Exactly. It doesn't matter anymore. I mean, when they nominate that guy in North Carolina,
Tom Tillis,
the state house speaker, and say he's the establishment one, and he is such a right-wing lunatic that he's the guy who thinks the minimum wage should be eliminated. I mean, that guy is to the right of, probably I'd say 90% of the people the Republicans would have even put up, just 20 years ago.
Yep.
So it doesn't, you call them establishment, call them Tea Party. It's all a bunch of crap at this point. The only difference between the establishment and Tea Party is the establishment guys are the guys that know to comb their hair and shave once in a while, and maybe put on clothing without tears in them and walk around openly shooting people. Maybe that's the difference. But, most of these guys, these so-called establishment guys, I mean, the two guys we're talking about in Georgia who love this guy, they're establishment guys. Saxby Chambliss, the guy that put on the ad against the guy, the triple amputee, Max Cleland, right, saying that he loved Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden. Yeah, that's establishment guy Saxby Chambliss, and the other one, Johnny Isaacson. So that just doesn't mean anything anymore. They're all crazy. Just some of them literally don't know how to hide it. Some of them say they're witches in commercials. If you don't declare you're a witch in a commercial, I guess that means you're establishment these days.
Right. The guy that Tillis beat was a guy who basically said, I don't know the specifics, but it was akin to the idea of, like, we really should go back to, senators being picked by legislatures and not, he was full
you're
on.
You're rolling things back 100 years at that point.
Yes. I mean, full on.
From when the state legislatures, much like they are today, were bought off. Back then it was by railroad and some other big steel interests and whatever. So that was a progressive reform because the legislatures were so bought off, they would appoint, whoever gave them the most money. So it became a direct election. These guys want to go back to that because, I trust the state legislature in Arizona or Wisconsin to pick a frickin', senator. Think of who they'd pick.
Now, I want to talk briefly about North Carolina because I think this is going to be one of the most important, well, obviously, but I mean, I think it's going to be the Senate race that may ultimately make the difference in terms of whether or not the Democrats retain control. It is going to be really fascinating to see if what has been going on with Moral Mondays down there, and we've been getting some regular dispatches in the better half of this program from Triangle Bill, who's down there, he's been involved in it over the past year and a half now, I guess, whether or not we're going to see an increased turnout from the relative to an off-year election to the presidential election, particularly because Tillis is so deeply involved in the voter suppression that's gone on there, the cutting off of unemployment benefits, the stopping of expansion of Medicaid. This is a guy who is really, when we think of the Republican Party, this is the guy now. I really don't know what the daylight is between what this guy espouses and what the establishment considers Tea Partiers. He was going on. There's apparently a tape of him out there talking about how they have to divide and conquer those on public assistance. So essentially that, like, the sick people attack the poor people. And we need to break up that coalition between the dispossessed and the really dispossessed. I guess Michael talked about this yesterday, but it's going to be fascinating to see where that lands. But let's tack briefly to what seems to be the sine qua non, if I will, of the Republican Ooh. Strategy going into the fall, and that is Benghazi.
I never knew you took Latin.
No, well, I did, actually. I did take quite a bit of Latin. I didn't do well.
Me neither. I had 2 years of it, man.
The only thing I remember is my sophomore year of high school, my teacher saying two things. One, he started the first class off by saying, "This is not a soliloquy. I want to hear from you." And that was the last we ever heard of that. I don't think that someone had a chance to say anything edgewise in that class for the rest of the year. And then he just kept referring to, if Ford only took Latin, they would have known that Nova in Spanish means no go, and they would have never tried to market that that car down in Mexico. That was the only two things I remember. But
that's important. I just learned that a lot of stuff ends with bus.
I don't even remember that.
Okay, go ahead.
Benghazi bus.
That's right. Benghazi bus equals Monica Lewinsky. But we digress. Let's go.
Well, give me your sense of this. I mean, I don't want to spend too much time trying to debunk Benghazi, although that maybe we should do a definitive one here. But the primary problem, it seems to me, is, like, I don't even know what the conspiracy is supposed to be.
I don't either. And, they released that, you know, Rice, what's her name, had actually taken the CIA's advice on talking points to use, because, you know, they're never talking points provided by the CIA to any other government figure in the history of the world. So clearly that's a huge scandal. No other government figures have been killed in war zones except for, like, the 20 different embassies that were attacked during the Bush administration. You know, no one's ever screwed up on security or warnings of attacks except for Condi Rice thinking that the August 6th, you know, presidential memo was a historical document talking about how mean Al-Qaeda was, not one when they said Al-Qaeda determined to attack America. It was historical. They were determined a year ago. They're not so determined anymore, except for in a month from now when they blow up downtown Manhattan and kill 3,000 people, but let's not investigate that anymore. It's sickening. This is nothing. This is crap. This is what they do. If you read either of the books on Karl Rove, Bush's Brain, or although I can't remember the other one, the Architect, written from Slater and Moore, the two great journalists down in Texas, and you'll see that one of the ways Rove turned Texas from a Democratic into a Republican state is he made a good friend over at the FBI, and they gin up fake scandals right before just so they could get the newspaper column, you know, and is once they had the newspaper column written, then they had the headlines for TV commercials, and they could run all on scandal, which is all the only reason Monica Lewinsky and Whitewater and any of that stuff ever existed. I'm sure Rove was behind the scenes knowing that Bush was coming in 2000 and all the people he talks to in that party. They ginned that scandal up. Sure, they went too far, and it cost them in 98, but it's quite clear that they won the presidency because of it, because it never would have been that close for them to steal it. I mean, obviously Al Gore had to make the dumb mistake of still not running with Clinton or whatever, but the point is they caused enough trouble that somebody running on a record of peace and prosperity didn't know how exactly to run because for political reasons, his president had been impeached. This is just what they do. And so in this way, it's perfect. It's a Pavlovian sort of dog type reminder to their crazy people about everything they did to the Clintons in the 90s. You know, so Benghazi equals and going after Hillary, and, you know, equals what they did to Bill. And, you know, it sort of hamstrings Obama right now and hopefully gets their people or crazy people to turn out and gins up some more stuff in the midterms. But the longer part, you know, plan here is they know that Hillary Clinton right now would destroy any of their candidates if she were indeed the Democratic nominee. And so they need to damage her in a way that has absolutely nothing to do with politics because they're on the wrong side of virtually everything. So, I mean, it is absolutely nothing. It is stupid. It's nothing. Like Fast and Furious was nothing. Like the IRS thing was nothing. They're all nothing.
I mean, we'll talk in a second about what a nothing burger this is on some level. But what do you think, in the event that the Republicans take the Senate, what do you think the chances are for this leading to an impeachment push? Because I actually think they are greater than 50%. Because the value,
I mean,
people say that Republicans paid a price for impeaching Bill Clinton. And I'm not so convinced of that. Yes, they, you know, maybe they lost the House in 98. But the reality is that
they didn't even lose it. They just lost seats.
They lost seats. The electoral terrain is very different. We have a lot of gerrymandering. And you're right. I don't think that we have George Bush as president if it weren't for that impeachment proceedings.
Oh, no. I mean, you've got to understand there's a number of ways that, you know,
I don't think we have repeal of Glass-Steagall if it wasn't for the impeachment hearings. I don't think there's a whole mess of things that
That's a great point. They pushed Bill Clinton to the right in some ways to try. I mean, yeah, I agree with you on that. You know, and I think the only question of whether Obama is actually impeached if they take the Senate, you know, I think, well, let's put it this way, you know, depending upon the numbers in the House and the Senate, the House has to hold hearings and vote. I mean, depending upon what happens in the midterms, if they're in control and in solid control of both, I think the only question that comes here, you need to get, what is it, I think 2/3 of the Senate, so they wouldn't be able
well,
to pull
no, no,
that
no.
off.
They won't get the conviction
to convict,
in the Senate.
Exactly.
They won't get the conviction
in the
Senate. In fact, I think... them knowing they won't get the conviction in the Senate
is better, actually.
Is
they don't want the conviction.
Them.
They
Even
just want the scandal headlines. Then. Yes. So I would say I agree with you. The only way I would disagree with you is if they come to the conclusion that they think that they pushed too far, which I don't think they're going to think last time around, and
no
they
way.
Decide. Let me finish this thought. Let's not impeach, but let's censure him, and let's just keep pushing and investigating because they're worried the I word might be pushing it too far. Either way, it doesn't much matter. They would impeach him, censure him, you know, because he won't be convicted. What does matter is they will spend all of their time investigating, attacking, and using that to pin to Hillary Clinton, or really, if it ends up not being her, whoever the Democratic nominee is, and then taking a couple points off
yep.
the top.
Yep.
And that really, in states like Ohio and Florida and a whole bunch of others, you know, it's not New York or California. You take a couple of points off the top, you've changed the ballgame.
Yep. And
you take a few more points away with voter suppression.
Let me also just, I want to just clarify something, my opinion about it pushing Clinton to the right. I don't think that the impeachment pushed Clinton to the right. I think what it did is it made it very hard for the left to actually mount any pushback for Clinton's neoliberal policies, because it's you're in a very difficult you're in a very difficult position when the Democrat is being attacked for something that's ridiculous, but needs all the support he can get so that he's not actually impeached to then attack him. I think, you know, that's my sense of what happened during that period, and. You know, so I don't know. And plus, I also think that, like, these guys.
But I also do think that it led a little bit to Clinton to be looking, because he's worried about his legacy. It led him to want to make more deals
yes,
and get things
I
passed.
Think that's true as well. And I think that same calculus would certainly apply to
Obama,
to President
seems
Obama.
Seems to have been worried about his legacy since the day before he was elected.
And you're right. It's a twofer, of course, because if you censure, let's say you censure President Obama. We're not going to impeach President Obama over this, because really the blame really lies with his State Department. So
right.
Who is Hillary Clinton? So yeah, it's a real twofer there. And Again,
and in a way, you're pulling like what a prosecutor would do. Okay, so we'll knock your sentence down from 15 to 10 years. I mean, in a way, they're negotiating with Obama. We won't impeach you. We'll just censure you. I mean, that's what you've got. That's what you'll have if you do this. I mean, seriously, behind closed doors, I'm sure trade-offs will be going on in that manner.
And I want to remind people that you can become a Benghazi watchdog right now if you go... If you go to the NRCC, this is the National Republican Congressional Campaign Committee or whatever it is, Republican, and if you add your name to their mailing list, you can audit, you can become a Benghazi watchdog. And I don't know yet if they're sending out those tote bags or the mugs that I mentioned when I was on Hayes' show the other day, but I think it's just a matter of time.
Wait, is this through Judicial Watch?
No, this is through the NRCC.
Oh, it's through the NRCC. That's awesome. And I love how one of the morons on the right, and, you know, they're really interchangeable. It's hard to remember all their names, got up on the House and, oh, it was Cotton. It was, from Arkansas, who said, you know, because he's a veteran, so he can say whatever he wants, clearly. Said, oh, well, the Democrats raised money on the Iraq war, and, you know, how could you be a hypocrite? You see, Mr. Cotton, let's work slowly here for your low IQ, which clearly has been overwhelmed by all the grits. Okay? In this particular case, we're talking about something that you guys are pushing and you guys are running on. In the Iraq war, we're talking about something that you guys pushed and the Democrats ran on to try to stop. Do you understand the difference? The Democrats didn't create the Iraq war to then fundraise on it.
Well, of course.
I know it's a really hard concept for a right-wing brain to understand.
I don't think it's...
Hopefully I went slowly enough there and used small enough words for Tom Cotton.
I don't think it's the grits. It could be the cheese that you sometimes add to it. But let me just provide this sort of debunking from the latest smoking gun that they're talking about, which is
the one that could be a mushroom cloud.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is that you know.
Sorry.
What's not clear here is there's a smoking gun, but nobody has identified exactly what it supposedly shot at. What was the bullet? What was the target? There's just a smoking gun, and the smoking gun is apparently an email that was found under a FOIA act done by one of these right-wing organizations that shows that this guy Rhodes, I think it's Ben Rhodes, who was in the political shop in the White House, sending an email to Susan Rice for her talking points on her visit to meet the press, I think it was, on, I believe, April 16th or 17th, 2012. I'll tell you why I know that date in a second. And the thing says, make sure you emphasize this is a function of the video, the internet video. He's a deputy national security advisor.
Right.
The an internet video, as opposed to our policy in the region in terms of these protests. Now, he says protest S. And the reason is, and this is the smoking gun that has to do with Libya. What is left out of every account, any account of what happened on September 11, 2012, it seems to me, that is firmly implanted in my mind, and I know this because that weekend after the 11th, whether it was like the 15th or the 16th or 17th, I can't remember, I hosted up for Hayes, and one of our days was specifically dedicated the entire 2 hours to talking about the Middle East with Reza Aslan was at the table. Houman Majid was at the table. Eli Lake was at the table. I can't remember who the fourth person was. And I specifically remember a graphic with all of these sort of red flares that signified how many protests were going on that week and that day of the 11th and the 10th, I think it was, and the 12th, around that internet video. They were in, if memory serves me, Morocco, Yemen, Sudan, Egypt, Libya, Algiers, and I believe that even Afghanistan tried to shut down YouTube because they were afraid of protests there. And there may have been others. Algeria, excuse me. And so if you go back to the accounts at that time by the New York Times,
by the Daily Caller, by anybody. It all talks about this internet video and how even on the right, what they were saying is disgusting that the president's coming out and having to distance himself from a video. Why should we be kowtowing to these Muslim extremists? And the reports at that time say there's confusion because it seems like these guys may have been like a force that was already organized, but they were attacking the consulate. And remember, they had come over the walls in Egypt, and I think
right.
in maybe in Yemen or one of the other countries had actually come over the walls in other embassies. So the idea that this was confusing is ridiculous. So now the argument from the right is, how dare Susan Rice go on these programs and be told that these protests across the region were a function of the internet video as opposed to our broader policies. And they're conflating that with the specifics of what was going on in Benghazi. And
right.
So I just tell people this so that they are when their relatives say, but what about the smoking gun from Rhodes? That they can actually respond to it and say, blah, 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 and now you're a nut job. And we're gonna be going through this crap for weeks. And I think the latest is that the Democrats are deciding whether or not they should even participate in these hearings or whether they should
they're stupid. Yeah. That's all. I mean, you cannot give clown shows like this any bipartisan legitimacy. Democrats should refuse to talk about it on Fox. They should refuse to participate in the committee. But, you know, they can scream and yell on the other side about it, but it needs to be made very clear to the media that this is a clown show and it is a partisan witch hunt. And the only way you can do that, I mean, you know, even with legitimate policy, the Republicans are so much better than Democrats when it comes to something like, you know, Obamacare. They make it a partisan thing. So then all the arguments become about, do you want this liberal policy or do you think the conservatives are right, even though Obamacare was never a liberal policy? It was one meant to be bipartisan. You know what I mean? It changes the way the media covers it. And if Democrats participate in this ridiculous charade, then they're gonna do exactly what the Republicans, that's their Republican plan.
Yep.
Make sure that on, you know, the NBC Nightly News and places like that, they cover the committee because they're going to want balance and they can show both Democrats and Republicans.
And I
don't give them it.
And I think they should even go further and say, you know, while they're spending millions of dollars on these Benghazi hearings, after we already have like a Senate report, I believe, and probably a House report at this point on what happened there. We've had a series of hearings already on this. They won't hold hearings on long-term unemployed. They will not vote for minimum wage. And frankly, the Democrats have to continue. I mean, we've said this before. They've got to go on and offer more of an agenda and just completely ignore what's going on, because the only people at this point, it seems to me, who this is going to convince one way or another to vote in the fall is going to be the base of the Republican Party. And
well,
there's nothing
the
Democrats
can
say
them
on
use
there
this,
that's going to stop
if they
them.
Don't use this to turn out their crazy people, they'll use something else. It'll be Agenda 21, or it'll be the UN, or it'll be Obama's taking your guns, or, you know, whatever. You know, women and lesbians are coming to abduct your young women and, you know, introduce them to witchcraft. I mean, they'll come up with something stupid to turn out the idiot minds and fevered, paranoid minds on the right. So the point is to not participate in it. Because once you participate in it, again, that's when it starts making it onto network TV, and that's when it starts becoming something that's legitimate for even talk show hosts to joke about, and that's when it invades the entire culture, becomes bipartisan, and that's when swing voters, even low-information ones that don't pay very much attention, start hearing things that lead them to vote in a way they might not otherwise vote. Don't do it. There's no point in it. It's crap. Make it clear that it's crap and that you're not participating in it. Hell, why doesn't the Senate hold a hearing on the still fishy case of the inventory building burning down for Daryl Issa's company to get insurance money that's never been solved? There was much suspect. You know, a lot of suspects. You know, people who suspected that was arson. Why don't we look into that?
Yeah,
it's just as legitimate as this. frankly, it's much more legitimate than this.
Well, I mean, at least there was outside investigations, and it didn't get. I mean, obviously, I mean,
I know ICE is not leading this particular one, but in the past, he's been such a cheerleader for looking into everything and anything. You know, why don't we look a little closer into that guy's past? A number of cars he and his brother stole, the times he was busted for illegally carrying a weapon, and the potential arson at his company that helped make him rich. Why don't we look into that? See what we find. My guess is we'd find ISA would probably should be serving time in a very different prison right now than the one he's actually in.
All right. So with that said, hopefully we will not be talking about Benghazi much more, although I imagine when we start to move into the talk of impeachment, we will end up taking this up again. But I really do think that, this is what they're going to hang their hat on. There was a great graph that I think Jed Lewison put up at Daily Kos, which shows that the number of mentions of Obamacare are going down in right-wing media, and the number of mentions of LexisNexis of Benghazi skyrockets. And this, of course, is coming because, you know, there's all sorts of data now showing that Obamacare, at the very least, is losing its salience as a Republican boogeyman. And so they're not going to be driving people out to the polls. I imagine that this is going to be, we're going to hear stuff of Benghazi over the next couple of months. They're going to bring it back. Right now it's in Off-Broadway. They're going to bring it back for a Broadway run in September. And then they'll also be they'll be playing around with a couple other themes.
It's just inner theater right now.
Yes. I think what we're going to see over like in June and in July and August, we'll see some like regional theater stuff. You know, what else are they going to fish around for? I think they realize that they're not going to get anywhere with marriage equality. Maybe there'll be something else. I don't know what they're going to be tracking down, but who knows?
Hey, maybe they can bring Fast and Furious back again. That was a fun one.
Fast and more furious.
That's right, Fast and Furious.
Faster and more furious, ladies and gentlemen. That's actually what they should be working into the Benghazi thing. It's faster.
Oh my God.
It's more furious. It's Benghazi Watchdog.
And right. As Benghazi was going on, Democrats were sitting in a room with the IRS planning to target conservative organizations.
Yeah, I think that one is.
They really should combine it all into one big one.
There has to be something else they'll find. But, Cliff, sadly, we are out of time. We'll talk a little more charter schools maybe next week. I know there's a great report out, and we will. I'll talk about that on Monday.
Yes, let's talk some about that. That's good stuff. Charters, taking your money, spending it on strippers. That's the short version.
Well, yeah, what are you going to do? I mean, come on.
You know, everybody needs to...
Education takes all sorts of forms. You're saying you're against field trips.
No. I always found my best education was outside of the classroom, so I think you make a very good point.
All right, Cliff.
That's what I said. Yeah, okay, I think you're kicking me off, so it's my time to go.
I know.
Say hi to Isabel.
I will.
Enjoy yourself.
Until next week.
All right, bye.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break.
You guys literally ran out of time because of Benghazi.
Yeah. To Benghazi, one more thing that Benghazi has done. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Isabel Gillies in just a moment.
Slicing up my balls, I want you to know.
We are back, ladies and gentlemen. It is Casual Friday, and I have Isabel Gillies on the phone, but you wouldn't know that until you hear this.
Hey, is Casual Friday. Let us welcome Isabel Gillies to the show. She's going to recommend a movie or two to watch on Netflix. It's the only way I know.
Listen to the picks from Isabel.
IsabelGillies.com.
Hello, IsabelGillies.com.
Hello. Hello.
Are you okay? I mean, I called you. It sounds like you're having some type of meltdown.
So listen to this.
You know, you texted me. You texted me the wrong phone number.
Well, here's the thing. I'm getting ready to go on because I've got a pretty great movie and a lot to discuss today. And I get a text, ding, ding, from my son, my 12-year-old son, who today is doing a jogathon to raise money for this all-school trip.
Okay? Mila's doing a walkathon today for charity, not for herself, like your son seems to be doing.
Well, it's kind of charity since it's the whole school.
Okay.
You're not raising it just for yourself. Anyway, the point is that he says, Mom, I don't have any lunch because he didn't tell me. They had to do a packed lunch today. So he's just run 88 times around a track. It's 12:15, and I was like,
times.
Oh, my God. So I run to the freezer, get a frozen burrito, put it in the microwave, all the time texting him being like, where are you? Oh, he's in the middle, like at the end, by the river on Riverside Park, so far away from me. So I am in the cab coming back, I'm running through the park with the burrito and the grapefruit juice and anything else that I could grab out of the refrigerator.
Well, what else did you bring him?
I brought him a whole entire pepper and a bag of some kind of Cheeto type thing, like one of those pirate booty things.
All right, hold on for 1 second. 88 times around the track. How big is the track?
88 times. I don't know. It's like a track. It's like a track and field.
All right, so the guys run like a couple of miles, and you're bringing him grapefruit juice, a frozen burrito, and a pepper. You trying to get him to vomit?
This was at 12:15, and I have to go on the phone with you at 12. It's right here. Please, it's right here. This is great. At 12:40.
Wait, so you haven't even delivered it to him yet.
No, I'm on my way back. I'm in the cab racing back.
Well, slow down. We're talking now.
I know, but my phone's gonna run out, so I'm getting on the cab, and then I'm gonna call you from I'll do the transfer, you know, to my home phone.
Oh, okay.
Oh my God, Sam, it's just parenting.
Well, I mean, it sounds a little helicopterish to me.
You do? What would you do? Would you say, okay, well, that's that. No food for you.
I would say this is a great time for you to learn how to plan in advance. So if you don't tell mommy, or in this case, daddy, that you need a bag lunch for your jogathon, guess what? You don't eat. That's what I told. I said the same thing to Saul the other day, actually. I mean, it wasn't obviously a jogathon because he can't really run. He just sort of stumbles. But
here's the thing. On principle, I agree with you. I just got this, like, crazed thing that I was like, I'm out. And I, like, grabbed. It's a whole carton of grapefruit juice. It's, like, the craziest lunch ever.
Yeah, I don't know if I would want grapefruit juice. As, like, you know.
What? Who doesn't want grapefruit juice? Okay, look,
like
I'm back
grapefruit.
At home. That's insane that just happened. Wait.
Right. Do you want me to call you back?
Can you do the thing of calling me on the
yeah,
on the
Yeah, I'll call you
phone?
On the home phone.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, bye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to
gosh, all sorts of turmoil. Some real drama today on the program. I mean, can you imagine if the kid didn't get his grapefruit juice?
It sounds like something you would... I've been a runner at different points. The kid's going to cramp. Frozen burrito and a grapefruit juice after a run? That's not a good call.
All right, hold on. We got to keep that...
Why don't you tell Isabel that?
Isabel, we're on. You there?
Am I going to get just... All right, can you hear me?
Yeah, that sounds much better, actually.
I feel like people are going to just come down on my head for being a helicopter parent, but it was gut instinct. I just ran.
Well, it's not just
grapefruit juice.
It's not just being a helicopter parent. It's like you dropped you were dropping like incendiary devices on your son too. You came in with a helicopter and you give the guy grapefruit juice after he's jogged all that time.
I'm a runner, Isabel. That seems like it might give him a stomachache.
Really? But it's a bean burrito.
Right.
Wow, that's really going to help. It should have been just like maybe the pepper. I think would have been good. Just the pepper.
I also gave him a protein drink.
That would have been...
Now there you go.
Wow.
A chocolate protein drink to have on hand.
All this drama.
Oh, my God. You have no idea. That was best laid plans, man. I was going to twiddle my thumbs. I was tweeting.
Was he appreciative?
I know. I had to be like, thank you, Mama, for coming down, running through the park lunatic.
You had to tell him that.
Well, he was stunned.
That you did it.
He was like, thanks.
Thanks for the burrito, Mom. I'm running now.
Thanks, Mom.
Wow.
And their whole little school was there. It was kind of cute. I don't even know. You know what? I've got the greatest movie to talk about, too.
All right. Well, let's do it. What did...
Well, is everything good? Do we have any other topics to cover?
Well, you'll find this exciting. Mile and I walked by Bill de Blasio's home the other day in Park Slope.
Because now you live in the 718.
That's right. That's right. She was
well,
very
excited.
Well, guess
what? My friend saw Bill de Blasio riding on the subway, just like not as a publicity thing, just riding on it with like a security guy.
Mila was in a state of like apoplexy. Like when I told her,
to see his house.
Yeah. In fact, I didn't even realize we had walked by it, but there's like a little booth out in front. And as we were, you know, as we passed it and then we're on the next block, I'm like, wait a second. And I looked it up and I said, Mila, guess whose house we just walked by? And she's like, who? I said, Bill de Blasio. And she just stood there, stunned, shaking. Oh, my God. Can we go back? Can we go back? No. No, we can't go back. We'll do it another time. She was very excited about it.
It's very cool. I saw him the other day.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yep. Not like in a private meeting or anything. I saw him at a party.
On TV? Well, yeah, at a party?
Yeah.
Well,
at a party.
Excuse us.
At the Tribeca Film Festival party, and he walked in. I was like, oh, my God, he's going to remember who I am, and he did.
Oh, well, there you go.
To his credit.
I was probably busy, Isabel, but thank you for the invite anyways.
What? It was a my husband thing.
Oh, all right.
He's a media guy now, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, thank him, too. I appreciate it. It's always great to see you guys.
All right, listen.
Ever since the Super Bowl party that I wasn't invited to. That was also really fun.
I don't want to walk down that road.
All right.
It's a lonesome road, Sam.
I can tell. Now you're in a mood because you're still like you're unwinding. I can tell. You're emotionally drained from what just happened.
I am a little bit. I don't know if it's like a triple Lutz mother move or if it's like a total, you know, bottom of the barrel mother move.
Well,
you kind of shocked me with that helicopter parent because it could be that I am a helicopter parent.
Let's just let this be worked out on like the Park Slope Parents forum or something like that.
Yeah, well, I don't live in Brooklyn, so
we'll just do it on Urban Baby. We'll do it on Urban Baby.
All right. Okay, let's take it out of baby mode.
Yeah. All right, so
kiddo
what do you got?
Mode.
I mean, what's new? What have you been doing? You're just waiting for your book to come out?
My book is coming out. I decided maybe I'd write a screenplay in the meantime.
Oh, here we go. You know, it is about...
I want to be on the... You know what? I want to...
Do people remember how you wrote your first book?
I want to be on Bob's Burgers the most.
You wanted what?
I want to be on Bob's Burgers the most.
Yeah, me too.
Well, you're on it, Hugo.
Yeah, on occasion. Not enough. Your son's got to start a letter writing campaign.
I know. I got him a Bob's Burgers t-shirt for his birthday.
Yeah, wait, didn't I get, I arranged for a phone message too, right?
A Bob's Burgers phone call,
yeah,
sure?
That's pretty good.
Hoot and holler did.
Who's on the t-shirt?
It's the hat it's the ears.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
All right, well, wait a second. Let's just remind people that Isabel wrote her first book just on, without really telling anybody, you wrote it on your BlackBerry, and the thing becomes a best-selling book.
Yeah.
So when you tell me you're writing a film script,
everybody's
I'm already getting resentful.
It.
What?
Really?
Yeah.
Then I wrote another one, and this is my third one, so now it's like a real deal.
Yeah, no, I know, but I'm saying that's why I'm getting like my resent is already building with your film script, because I know it's going to be one of those things like... I finished this last weekend. I did it over the weekend. It just got bought for millions of dollars.
Oh, my screenplay? Oh, yeah. God, your mouth to God's ears. Yeah, it's kind of a funny idea, I hope.
Well,
but, you know, I'm not that funny. So.
Well, we'll see. If you need some punch-up, let me know. But in the meantime, if it is
I
my
will.
Mouth
you
to
can...
God's ears, I think I'm in for 10%.
Yeah, I get my feelings hurt. I have no sense of irony or, you know, any of that stuff. So
I apologize. Can I just interject? And this, Isabel, this includes you but goes beyond you. I don't think I've heard anybody else in my life have the same response of, yeah, the amount of times Sam gets that said to him. Just that one, like, yeah.
Yeah,
Sam,
and then
Sam goes, what
but
about
But I'm taking that?
That
yeah as an agreement that I get 10%.
Right, yeah.
Oh, I guess I missed the 10%.
Huh.
I don't want to give anybody 10%.
Okay.
I want it all to myself.
I understand. Well, then you know what? Maybe from my mouth, God will hear something different in his ears. What do you think about that?
Well, if you punch it up, if you do a draft, you can have 50%. I don't know. What am I talking about? I haven't even started writing it.
Wait, you haven't?
All I do is just get and run through the park like a maniac with a big carton of grapefruit juice.
I'm gonna get a note from God, and it's just gonna be like she hasn't even started it, Sam.
She hasn't started it.
All she did was get a screenwriting program. So just take it easy.
Yeah, I haven't even done that. I haven't even done that.
Wait,
I hear that isn't even.
So I asked you what you've been doing.
That isn't even
what you've been doing.
An Apple thing.
What you've been doing while you wait for your book to come out. And you said, I'm writing a screenplay, but you haven't even bought a screen. What have you been really doing, Isabel?
Well, I wrote two articles for Savor.
Oh.
How about that for apples?
All right. That's pretty good.
And?
About apples or something else?
No. One was about lunch and one's about
breakfast.
A lobster man.
The lobster man?
What?
Yeah.
What's that?
It's a cooking magazine.
All right.
You know, I've been cooking a lot.
Yeah, well, why not? You get all those free pots and pans from Savor every time you write a piece, right?
What?
I don't know.
I wish.
I don't know how that works.
Oh, my God. Wait, if anybody's seen this movie, maybe they have.
Well, all right, let's do it, because you seem you're so excited about this movie. I always get excited about movies that you get excited about.
Okay. Are you ready?
Hold on
for
a second.
First of all.
I wish we had some, like, all right, here, how about this? We'll get some little music. A little drum roll.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Hold on. It also goes into Deutsch.
Oh,
Deutsch.
Very good.
Yeah. Good. All right. What is it?
Makes me feel a little bit like I'm a princess, and believe me, I wish I was.
Well, I mean, it was, you know, it's Deutschland. It's,
oh,
yeah.
That's not nice. I thought that maybe it was like some
a Bavarian
royal thing,
prince.
I could pretend that I was Kate Middleton.
A Bavarian princess.
Yeah, I want to be the English princess.
Well, sorry.
Royalty.
Today, you're German. So, what do you got?
Sorry. It's a French movie.
Ah.
It's a French movie, and it was out in the theaters very recently.
Now, when you say it's a French movie, are you saying like it's French stylistically, or are you saying it's in a foreign language?
It is in a foreign language, and that language would be French.
All right.
And it is a quintessentially French movie.
Ah, bien sûr.
Bien sûr. Okay, ready?
Yeah. Do you speak French?
A petit Sam. Petit peu.
I speak a little bit of French. Okay.
Je comprends.
You understand?
Français, oui.
French,
But je ne parle bien.
Je ne parle pas. Je parle pas bien.
Je parle pas. Mais
I don't speak well.
Except I can do this aloud. I can go.
All right, this is really.
Mais c'est ça.
Okay, all right. Let's hear. So what is the movie? What is it?
It's called Blue is the Warmest Color.
Oh my God! I cannot tell you the reaction we just got from Matt in here. He just rolled his eyes in complete exasperation.
I mean, you just went to Tribeca Film Festival. Of course, you're going to recommend a movie like that.
What? It's about, it's first of all, it's beautiful. It's on Netflix. Stream it.
I hear it's very overrated.
Oh!
Overrated? It's so overrated. Wow. Such negativity. It's got, like, incredible. This is not a movie for Mila. No, sir.
Well, she also.
Two of the biggest sex scenes I've ever seen in a movie.
It's got what?
Huge sex scenes.
What does that mean, huge?
Like long
and involved and really long.
Oh, well, that makes me
and
very
really
uncomfortable.
Straight on.
I don't need that. I don't need to feel that inadequate. It's really.
You. It's women.
Oh. All right.
Lesbians.
Is that down?
Yep. Now and so, you know what, Sam? The whole thing of like, I have this too many babies and family, I can never go out. That's fine. You just let this roll. And you guys watch it, and then you'll have some fun.
All right, wait a second. What's it about, first? The only thing you've said
it's
is
about,
it's a
coming-of-age movie. It's actually a very beautiful movie. It's a coming-of-age movie. It's about falling in love for the first time, which I'm interested in because that's what my book's about. And it's about a French girl who falls in love with this girl with blonde blue hair.
It's about a French girl who falls in love with another girl with blue hair.
Yeah. It's about.
Do we even know her name, or is she just known as like La Femme Bleue? La Femme Coiffe Bleue.
It's a coming of age. She's really young. They're both young, and she falls in love, and it's just a love story. And it's all very close, like all the camera work is very close and long takes, and it's just sort of fascinating, and it's incredibly French.
So a little bit Cassavetes.
She's incredibly French. You know what? It is kind of Cassavetes-ish. That is so smart of you, Sam. It is Cassavetes-ish. It totally is. That is really, really. I can't even believe you said that. Did you read it?
Did I read it? No, I was just.
Did you like quickly Google it and someone else said that?
No, close shots, long takes.
Cassavetes,
blue hair.
Cassavetes.
All right, so it's the name of it is
wow,
what?
Sam, you're cooking with gas there, buddy.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm totally tuned in. Wait, now what is the name of it again?
Blue is the Warmest Color.
Ah, a reference to the hair.
Oui.
And oui. So how did you come across this movie? You were
because
reading reviews.
It was in the theater, and I wanted to see it in the theater, but somehow never got around to it, and it's long. It's almost 3 hours long.
Oh, my God.
And,
I don't think,
it's
like
no,
longer than a Bond
film. You will
totally
get into it, and it's just involving. It's very, it's moving. It's very emotional. It's very much like Cassavetes, actually. It really is, and it's just kind of worth the time because it is so vibrant. It's like it's like you can feel. It's very sort of sensual, hugely sensual, and. It's hot. It's sort of like a hot movie, but it's about falling in love. And this girl is so open and so vulnerable, and you can't believe that it's on film, kind of. And it's very it's just really interesting and engaging. And then there are these great sex scenes. And then, but she's, my parents loved it.
Really?
Because my mother was like, I think there only needed to be one sex scene. But, it's a real, I've never seen a sex scene like that in a movie.
I mean, I gotta say, this doesn't sound like the type of movie that, like sensual and raw emotion. That's not generally, you know, I don't know if I respond to stuff like that. I think I'm too detached.
I feel that you will respond to it. I feel like really imagine anyone not responding. It's like not responding to biting into a peach. Like, who doesn't respond to that?
Well, it depends. I mean, if the peach tastes good, I like it. I like peach iced tea, peach flavored iced tea, but.
What?
I'm just not, I don't know if I feel comfortable with the whole thing. It just sounds
too.
That sounds like
It sounds like one of those artsy movies who's just out there to be as artsy as possible.
I don't know.
Wrong.
I just sort of feel like you're.
Just to be clear, the Philistine is Matt, and the guy with Asperger's is Sam.
No.
I'm not saying anything.
I'm just saying that this, like, this doesn't sound like a fun, you know, like a weekend movie. It sounds like it's like course dissertation.
No, it's not. And I'm on a pretty good record. Have I ever led you astray? Except for what one time? But
there was your Bond pick was pretty bad, didn't you say?
I know,
something
that
like
was the one,
what
was
it
one.
Like? What was it?
You,
it was
I
like
know.
Moonraker or something like that?
I know. I'll never live it down. But I'm telling you, I wouldn't say this to you. It's about falling in love. It's about young girls. But it's like you become a little bit alive when you watch it. And certainly, like, all the stuff. It's just like, very tactile and sensual. And, like, they eat. There's this whole scene where they eat spaghetti. And then, like, all there's. It's honestly. It's so worth it just to,
each
like,
time.
Feel your
humanity.
You
know what else is a good spaghetti scene? Lady and the Tramp?
I've never.
Each time you say a word like tactile or alive or vibrant, Sam just sort of visibly gets more physically uncomfortable. It's amazing, actually.
Yeah, I don't know if I feel comfortable with all that.
I'm giving you an experience. It's kind of beyond a movie. It's
I'm looking up some stuff here, and everyone seems to be focusing on this 10-minute sex scene.
That does seem long.
10 minutes.
And that's just one of the scenes, apparently.
But I guess if it's on Netflix, you can fast forward through it. I mean, I like to get to the story part. I get it, but
it's very alive of you, Sam.
It's like it's weirdly is part of the story. It's honestly it's really kind of awakening. You're like, whoa. This is
wow, so, I mean, it sounds like what's...
I am Sam Cedar. I like making fun of and alienating my friends and increasing Social Security. Does not compute. Film does not compute.
That's
but
Michael.
He got Cassavetes right away, which it is like Cassavetes.
There was, back in the day, I was a big Cassavetes fan.
God, me too.
But those days are so gone. I just,
used to be Cassavetes, now Medicaid.
Right.
Does not compute.
Right, that's right.
But... Sam, yeah. Listen, how about that in another culture, in a European country, they can explore like the biggest part like of being a human, which is love.
Wait,
the
but aren't
biggest
you married?
Thing we have.
This is like a
Are
dissertation
you
how
off?
How not
no,
to
not
recommend a movie
no.
to
Michael's,
Sam.
Michael's laughing.
Sam's discomfort, not you at all.
Discomfort.
It is discomfort.
It is. Maybe it's just because, that doesn't seem like the biggest part of my life right now. It seems like Saul won't sleep. He's staying up for
okay. Guess
yeah.
what?
What?
Guess what? He's going to sleep for 3 hours at some point. And you take Nikki and you watch this movie, and I promise you those Cassavetes days will come back. That's what I'm saying to you. I'm saying that this is something that's going to wake you up a little bit, and it's going to be like, hey, you know what? Life is like round and soft and open-eyed, and it's going to just – it is. And honestly, I think you need it, man.
I see a movie here. I see a movie here.
I'm starting to worry about what Sam watching this movie would do for the show.
Right. Hey, guys, I'm not coming in for the next 6 months.
Can you cover for me? I'm going to, like, discover myself. I'm abandoning my family.
Yeah.
Aren't you friends with me? I am the most opposite of you in the world, right?
Yeah.
I'm emotional.
Right.
I'm like, right, all those things.
Unloving.
I like, talk about a lot. And you're still friends with me.
That's true. That's absolutely right. Enjoy that quite a bit.
So it's in you. There's a part of you. And look, look at Nikki.
Okay.
She's totally
how
like
romantic.
That. She's like baby mama. There's all these boobs in the movie. It's great.
All right. Well,
it's so hot. It's this like hot movie. I can't believe it. I'm practically saying go watch. It's certainly not pornography, but I'm saying something like go watch something that you will be guaranteed to have good sex.
Right,
after,
now
and you're like, what?
I don't
not me.
Feel comfortable where this is going
Listen,
at all.
Isabel, if I want to watch something good with boobs, I'll watch Game of Thrones.
Yeah, but I love Game of Thrones too.
Yeah. No,
this
I'm not feeling comfortable
like
with
a very, very cerebral way
all right,
of watching
well,
pornography.
The movie is, I got it written down here, Blue is the Warmest Color.
Yes.
I will watch it. I can't guarantee I'm going to watch it this weekend. It's 3 hours long. But I have a feeling over the next couple of weekends I'm going to get an opportunity.
I'm telling you, it's...
And when he emails you that he ended up watching a Frontline documentary on future trading instead, don't take it hard.
Yeah.
That's right. It's kind of like, so coming of age, it's kind of like Catcher in the Rye meets like, what was that movie back in the day with the two girls?
Heathers?
It's very like, it's like wet and open.
All
and
right.
It's just very, it is. Hey,
I got back.
This is not a bit anymore. He's so genuinely uncomfortable. It's beautiful.
It's our First Amendment right, freedom of expression. Express yourself. Like
I'm not saying they shouldn't do it. I'm just saying like movies that are described as like wet and open. It's not. It's not.
It's true, Sam. It's Cassavetes. I'm telling you,
it's a pretty wet movie.
Oh my gosh! Listen to what happened.
What?
I got an email from someone who read The Goldfinch because I recommended it.
I'm gonna read that book.
Can you? And he said he liked it.
All right.
I don't even know if I've written back to him because I was honestly that nothing makes me happier. So if people are really listening and are really going to do it, I promise you the country is going to feel love tonight.
Oh, my God.
That is what I'm here to say.
All right. Well, Isabel Gillies with predictions from your mouth to God's ears.
It's not a prediction. It's also kind of a wish, it feels like.
A prescription.
Like Isabel is wishing.
Prescription for humanity.
Yes.
Listen,
a more
hey,
wet,
man, a little love.
More alive humanity. Right, Isabel?
Yes. I think a little more love,
right
a little less.
No, I want to keep this lie going.
All right. Well, Isabel, this is I love
like,
it.
You're dying to get off the phone with me.
No, so no, come on. That's not it. It's just we gotta get going.
All right. Well, I give you that with all my good wishes.
All
that
right.
Movie.
All right. The movie
Gentlemen,
again
watch
is
it.
Blue is the Warmest Color. I will definitely keep you updated on whether or not I watched it.
Merci.
All right.
Cher.
Bonjour. Merci beaucoup. très charmante. Au revoir.
Au revoir.
Tout à l'heure.
À tout à l'heure.
À tout à l'heure. Ouais, bye bye.
Okay. Bye.
All right. Well, there it is. All right. Well, before we go, I guess it's going to be Freebie Friday, right?
I think there's enough time to do to shoot over.
No, Michael's like, it shouldn't be.
I'm kidding. We should go into the better half.
Let's go to the song. We'll go right into the better half.
Okay. This song will take us into the better half.
This is a listener sent us this remix they did of Robin Thicke's Blurred Lines and a little someone who you might all recall as Professor Walter Block.
Yeah, I'm hoping to have the ringtone up by Monday so that people can actually purchase a ringtone from the version that I did. But let's play this one.
Unless you're disoriented after watching that movie.
Hey, you're interrupting again.
If he can't live in an apartment and he can't feed his kids, what difference does it make that he can give them two meals a week as opposed to no meals a week?
So you're taking back your concession to me that six is greater than zero?
No. Six as a number is greater than zero, but not in the context of what it costs to live. I mean, yes, having cancer in one part of your body is better than having your entire body racked with cancer.
Hey, you're interrupting again.
Yes, six is more than zero. Is it necessarily better? I mean, when we're talking about dollars and we're talking about cost, not necessarily, no.
Hey, you're interrupting again.
All right, folks. You know the drill. Become a member today at Majority.fm. MajorityReportKickback.com.
That was from Kenny Pick, by the way.
Kenny Pick. Thank you, Kenny Pick. Well done.
Kenny's a funny guy.
MajorityReportKickback.com, where you can, if you buy crap through Amazon, buy it through that link. MajorityReportKickback.com. JustCoffee.coop. Fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. 10% off with the coupon code Majority. Give us a review on iTunes. What else? Facebook, Twitter, spread the word. Get the app at majorityapp.com. See you in the better half.